If you are a businesswoman working to amplify your 6- and 7-figure business from success to significance, then you know it's not just about the right strategies or the right tactics. It's more and more about high caliber people around you, your team, your collaborators, and advisors that can open doors for you and widen your reach. Welcome to Your Circle of Influence podcast with your hosts, Dr. Monica Ogando and Amy Walker.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back. Well, did you know that song?
I do not know that song, but I like listening to you.
It's my musical threats flaring up again. Welcome back to Your Circle of Influence. I'm your co-host, Dr. Monica Ogando.
And I'm Amy Walker.
This is such a timely topic. We're talking about your team as part of your thought leadership platform, as an income stream, as a leverage point for your brand. And listen to me, people. Listen to me. I'm getting close to the microphone. You want to hear what Amy has to say about this, because it might make the difference between you being a multimillionaire of impact and significance or just trudging along. I'm very serious about this.
Ooh, that was serious.
Yes.
Trudging.
Because I've seen what you do with team. And I know that it's by experience, right? It's not something that you read somewhere and said, oh, let me try this. Like, you've been forged by the fire, my friend. And so, you know, I always sit at the foot of the master. So I'm going to listen also. I'm going to be like the audience representative. Like, the questions that they want to ask, I'm going to ask them.
So okay, that I'm down with that. All this.
Okay, let's do
I'm
it.
I'm here for it.
Let's do it.
So first of all, I love the way that we're structuring this conversation, because we're talking about how can you use your team as an income stream. Mm-hmm. Most people think team and they think expense account, right?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Team, expensive, can't afford it, won't do it, just do it myself.
Yep.
Welcome to the recipe for drudgery for life. That's mm-hmm. literally it. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. is it. Okay, so Monica, as the representative of all listeners, what questions do you have about hiring a team that makes you more money versus mm-hmm. a team that just costs money?
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to think about somebody who perhaps has never hired a team member. And then I'm going to think about somebody who's in the middle of the road and who has been burned by hiring the wrong person.
Ooh, yes. Both good.
Yes. So the first one is, how do I get started hiring a team? I can't duplicate myself. I'm surrendered to the fact that the do-it-yourself isn't sustainable. Now, who mm-hmm. do I hire first and why?
Okay, so who you hire first is somebody who is going to be low-cost, high ROI.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they do not cost you a lot to pay other payroll, but they produce a lot for you. Okay. What most people do when they hire first is they hire somebody who's low cost, zero ROI. They get an admin person, and then that admin person makes no more money for the business. Mm-hmm. And then what they do is they replace the tasks that they did with me doing more stuff that makes the company money. So that would look like, I'm going to hire somebody to do all of my filing for me. And then now I have to pay their payroll. So now I have to go sell more mm-hmm. to pay for their payroll. So I didn't actually end up having less work to do. Mm-hmm. I'm just doing different work.
Yeah.
So we don't want to do that. What we want to do instead is we want to find an opportunity for somebody that we don't have to pay a lot, but they make us a lot more money.
Like,
a great example is an appointment setter.
Oh.
Or somebody to do lead generation, or somebody to book you for speaking gigs, right? Like, that type of person you can hire. And one of the things that about half of my team is in the US and about half of my team is in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And so my appointment setters are in the Philippines. And the funny thing is, I actually never wanted to hire that in the Philippines, because I always thought that would be a communication gap or mm-hmm. the time zone, or, you know, I just didn't think it would work. Mm-hmm. And then when 2020 happened, I could not find appointment setters for the life of me, which I get. I like, everybody was at home. Your whole family was at home. So the idea of trying to make phone calls and be professional while all your kids are like, I can't get on my Zoom, Mom. You know, like, this is no fun. I get it.
But I couldn't. Slow.
Yeah. I couldn't hire anybody stateside. And so I started hiring in the Philippines. And what I found was it costs less, they produced better, and they stay with me a lot longer. Mm-hmm. So I have people that I hired during the pandemic that have now been with me for coming on 3 years and mm-hmm. will probably work with me until the day we all retire. Like mm-hmm. they're not going anywhere anytime soon. Mm-hmm. So, that's a great example of I pay my appointment setter $6 an hour. Mm-hmm. So their base pay is $480 per month because they work mm-hmm. 20 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And they each produce about $20,000 in sales per month.
Wow. Now, yeah. how do you turn that ROI? Is it, where do they get those leads from?
Well, I produce a lot of leads, you guys. So yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. If you don't have leads, then maybe you need to hire somebody to help you with lead generation.
Okay.
If you have leads, but you don't have time to call the leads, then you need to hire an appointment setter. Mm-hmm. But your first hire should be somebody who is going to cost you a little, but be able to produce high ROI. So now mm-hmm. what I do next is I take that money, because now we have more money. So now I take that money and I invest that into somebody who is going to now save me time. Mm-hmm. So first I want to hire somebody who's going to make me money. Mm-hmm. Then I want to hire somebody who's going to make me time.
Yeah. And those would be like the admin folks so that you don't have to deal with that kind of crap.
Or other coaches.
Yeah.
Right. Like other coaches, they're actually high cost. And they don't make more.
Yes, we are, honey. Yes, we are.
They're my highest paid. My coaches are my highest paid people on my team. Right. Yes, yes. And they don't make me more money. Mm-hmm. But they give me a tremendous amount of freedom and allow us to be able to serve more people. So we're not maxing out.
Right.
When I have a great sales month. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Okay. This is good. So first order of business is low cost, high ROI, so it makes you money. And then the mm-hmm. next order of business is save me time, create more
yeah.
freedom.
Take and stuff you know, plate. It's not like a one-to-one. It's not like I hire one appointment setter and then one admin person. Your unique business is going to have a flow. And maybe it's that you hire out your entire sales team first.
Sure.
And then you hire out your admin, or maybe you hire a couple setters and then you hire mm-hmm. an admin person. Then you hire out fulfillment. Every business is going to have a different flow, but the first is always, you're always going to want it to be somebody who is low cost, high ROI.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That makes perfect sense to me. Now, what if somebody is in the middle of the road and with doing this, like, well, I wish I would have known this a year ago or a week ago or whatever. And they've hired wrong. Or yeah. they realize that it takes longer to get them up and running because they're spending so much time training, or that there's no match to maybe the communication is lost in translation, or maybe the work ethic, or maybe those kinds of
things. These are all different problems that all have the same source, right?
Okay, tell me.
So the source of it is every one of these situations you gave, you're lacking a hiring and training process.
Mm-hmm.
So at the core of all of them, it's like you're missing the spinal cord. So you've got all these body parts, but they don't know all how to talk to each other and function well because the spinal cord's not there. So before I hire, there are things that I do.
Okay.
And this is not necessarily in exactly like I do it in this, then this, then this, but these are all things that get done before we hire. Mm-hmm. So the first is we get really clear on what we actually need them to do. And that might sound so like, of course you do, but you'd be amazed how many people are like, I'm going to hire an assistant. What do you want them to do? I don't know. I just know I need help. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hire a marketing person. Well, what do you want them to do? I just want them to market for us. Okay. Mm-hmm. Are we talking Facebook ads? Are we talking copywriting? Are we talking graphic design? Are we talking social media management? Are we talking, they're going to do your PR? Like, what yeah. are we talking about here? That's these right. are all that's very right. different, unique skill sets. Yeah. So that's the very first thing, is getting really clear on what actually you want them to do. Then laying out the SOPs of the workflow. Mm-hmm. Because if you hire them in and you don't have a workflow built, they will build the workflow in their brain. Mm-hmm. And then if they're a good employee, they'll stick with you. But when they leave, and they always will, you guys, let's just be clear that when we hire somebody, this is not them entering into an indentured servitude agreement.
Right. Right. This isn't a life partnership.
This is not a life partnership. They will eventually move.
Yes.
And what happens is I hear this from business owners. Well, I hired and I had a good person and then they left after a couple of years and we were just right back to where we started. Mm. I was like, yes, because you hired them without a workflow, without a process. And so they internally built it because they were a good person. And then when they left, the process left in their brain.
Mm-hmm.
We can't have that. We have to create the process so that, first of all, they'll get up and running faster and they'll be successful faster. It'll make it easier for us faster. But then also when they do eventually leave, mm-hmm. You're now hiring someone to come in and do the process that's been tweaked and fine-tuned and documented and updated. And now the next person comes in and they have an even easier road to follow.
Right. That makes perfect sense to me. I mean, I wouldn't have thought of it myself.
But now that you say it,
but
I'm
now
on board.
That you've articulated it, I'm a duh. I'm like, of course.
Yeah. Okay. So the other thing, this one gets forgotten a lot, is you need to get really clear on what your core values are and what your vision is for the company, because nothing kills momentum faster than having the wrong fit person on your team. Mm. And I'm not talking wrong fit for skill. Mm-hmm. I'm talking wrong fit for culture and core values, and they're just not aligned with where you're going.
Yeah.
It will create, it will poison the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So the last person that we fired them because they were a cultural misfit. One of our core values is that drama is great in books and movies, but calm is best in business. Mm-hmm. And they brought a lot of drama to the table. And within like 2 weeks of them being hired, and they weren't missing their benchmarks. They were hitting all their training benchmarks. But like three people on the team reached out to say, hey, this person's actually really hard to work with. And they're really dramatic. And they're causing a lot of like chaos. And I just don't know if they're a good fit. And like, we want to protect the team.
Yeah.
And so it was like, yeah, so that's out of alignment with our core values. If they're like starting up fights about like who, not physical ones, but like,
no, not with a remote team.
Yeah, no, like there's no like punches being thrown, but like they were getting into it with people like, you didn't set that person, I set that person. It's like, well, they're on my lead list. You know, it's just like weird stuff that there's no reason why we need to fight about something like that. Like that's an immediate, that person's clearly not a fit for us. So if you don't have your core values, there's no way for you to express that. And then people come in and you're just hoping that there's an alignment there.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have that written, you can put that in, you can work that into the job post.
Mm-hmm.
You can work it into the interview. You can work it into the training. And so by the time they get in, like they know what the expectation is for the culture.
Yeah.
And if they're not a fit, you know, pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And now, then
do you use any kind of typing assessments when you're hiring people as part of the onboarding process to know like what their strengths are and where how to best leverage them and stuff like that?
So I always do skills assessments. And I have a multi-tier interview process. So the first interview, I am looking for, are they a fit? Mm-hmm. So the first interview is culture fit, salary fit, basic skill fit, and personality fit.
Okay.
Because there are certain personalities, like while they would be great for somebody else, I know that I can't give them what they want. Like, here's a great example, a team member who wants to be best friends with everybody they work with.
Right.
I don't have time to hang out on the weekends.
Right.
Right. Like we're not going out after
work. With you. I have five children.
Like my friends right now are people that rely on me for life. So that's who I spend my time with. So I know I can't sustain that. And if that's what they're looking for in leadership and in a company, they're not going to be a good fit with us.
Mm-hmm.
So the first interview is the fit interview. Then the second thing that we do is the skills assessment.
Okay.
So this is where I'm now assessing how well they can do at their particular job. And I will create assessments for every job that we hire for. This is where if you, and I, I don't do like a Colby assessment or anything like that, or Myers-Briggs before I hire, but I know a lot of people that really love to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're doing that one could go before the first interview because you already know kind of who you're looking to interview. Mm-hmm. So you could use that as a filter to get rid of the other people. But the
before
skills,
the culture fit.
Before the culture fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I would put that. Mm-hmm. But if you know you're open and it doesn't matter what their Myers-Briggs is or their Colby, then the skills assessment needs to come after the fit, because otherwise you get too, they're both really influential. So I will, after every first round of interviews, I'll come out with my top candidates. And I'm like, I really love this person. I hope they do great on the culture or on the skills test. Mm-hmm. And then they come out and I'm like, oh no, terrible. I could never hire you. Right. Mm-hmm. But if you do the skills thing first and you see who is really good, because I've done this before too, you see who's really good, you make yourself like them.
Oh yeah.
And because you know how talented they are.
I've done that, Amy.
Yes. And it's like, oh, I actually don't really like you. And my people are also not really going to like you. So this is not, it's not actually as good as I thought it was going to be.
I know. Yeah, I know. Okay. So culture fit, skills mm-hmm. assessment, and yep. then what?
Then we hire them and we give them a scale up plan for onboarding. Ooh. So the scale up plan is that we know on day one, they're not going to be up to fit where we want them to be. Mm-hmm. But we also know that at month three, if they're not up to where we want them to be, we're going to be pulling our hair out. So right. depending on the position, this scale up plan could be a 3-week scale up plan. Which is kind of standard for like basic admin support. By 3 weeks, you want them up to speed on everything. Mm-hmm. And in a sales position, it's usually more like 6 weeks. If it's something that's very highly technical, my coaches are my longest scale up plan because it takes some time to learn how I do things.
Mm-hmm.
So they sometimes will have to go through with an entire group before they've got it, you know? Mm-hmm. But what we do is we go through and each week there's standards that they have to hit in terms of their performance mm-hmm. and also things that they have to study or knowledge that they have to gain. Right. And it's around the activities of their job. It's also around the company culture and the systems that we use.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time, so I can tell early on if somebody's not a fit. Because hiring the wrong person and holding on to them is worse than mm-hmm. hiring the wrong person and firing. Yeah. You're going to end up at the same place anyway. But during the process of you trying to make them a fit, you're going to lose money. You're going to lose time. Everyone else is going to be mad. Like the longer you keep that person, whenever they talk, you hear people say hire slow, fire fast.
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly what we're talking about. We're going to go through all those layers to try to get the right person on the team. But the minute we know they're not the right person, we're going to let them go.
Yep.
So if at the end of week one, they're falling below, then you can have the conversation and say, hey, you know, based on where you should be at, you're a little bit below. So what I want you to focus on this week is you got to get up to speed on these areas, but you're also going to need to learn these new areas.
Mm-hmm.
By week two, if they're still falling behind, that's a good indicator that they're probably not going to be a good fit. And so at week two, then I would have the conversation of saying, you know, this week is going to be the teller.
Mm-hmm.
This next week, either we're going to know that yes, this is a fit or no, it's not a fit. And this is where you've got to be. And by week, in that time, most of them actually quit instead of you having to fire them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's easy. I mean, mm-hmm. not easy, but you know, sometimes it's, I think sometimes the reason why people hire or hesitate to fire is because they don't want the conflict or they don't want the uncomfortable conversation or whatever. So when they take it on, then it's like, oh, okay, good. We're on the same page.
Well, and also they don't want to go through the hassle of hiring again.
Yeah.
But when you build out the process, it becomes so much easier to hire. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So much easier.
I love these step-by-step. I love them. So when your team, when you reframe the paradigm
mm-hmm.
so that the team isn't a line item in your expenses, but rather an income stream,
mm-hmm.
then from that perspective, you want to look at number one, who you'd hire first is somebody who's low cost and high ROI. Number two, somebody who would save you time. And then eventually you scale that? Or is there like a third category of people to hire?
So you can build up your business a good bit hiring just what we've talked about here. And also the thing is, this is not a hugely expensive team, right? Because a lot of them are going to be independent contractors. You can hire overseas. There's a lot of things that you can do. The third place of scale is actually that you have to start. It's actually the hardest one, because what you've done to build your $1 million business or $500,000 business or however far you get with this little efficient, tight team, all of the things that you were doing to get you there are now the things that stop you from getting to the next level. So the third level of hiring is you have to get out of the way. And you have to hire people to do the things that you're really good at doing and that everybody wants you to be doing. And nobody else likes the idea of somebody else doing it. And so it's like, that's the next thing is, you know, like for my business, and I don't have the desire for Amy Walker Consulting to be a $10, $15, $20 million a year company. But if I did, I would have to not be the CEO of the company. And I would have to, like, I've started the company and I would have to hire people to run all of the roles. And I would step into more of like an advisory, this is where we want to get to, set the vision, but I would have to have other people to actually implement that. And I'd have to get out of the way because I'm too invested in too many areas of my business. And it's still, even though that's not my end game, my goal this year, and we talked about this a couple months ago, but my goal this year is to empower my team to really take the ball and run with it and let me get out of the way so that we can grow. So I think that's the third phase, is you have to get out of the way so you can grow and bring on board leaders that are more talented than you, that know more than you, and like, woo, let your ego learn to adjust.
Yes, Lord. Yes. And so part of the conversation, once again, begin with the end in mind. Because these hiring decisions and the scale of the team is dependent on whether you want a $10, $20 million company or to sell it.
Or let's be honest, most solopreneurs, they can't really build and sustain and break past $150,000 a year. Even if they can do $150,000 in a year, they have up years and down years because their life goes up and down, right?
Sure.
So most solopreneurs tap out at that space.
A
solopreneur with one or two really good, like a really good virtual marketing assistant and a really good appointment setter, they can hit, like, they can double that. With a tight-knit core team of maybe like five independent contractors, you can do $500,000. But once you are trying to jump from like $500,000 to $2 million, that's where your structure has to change, because the structure that you created to get to $500,000 is, it's not going to work. Like, your org chart has to change. And you need, in the beginning, you need a lot of doers. And then you'll get to the point where you need generators and leaders and people who, strategists inside of your team. So it just, you know, it's going to shift. It doesn't, but here's the thing. Like, whenever people tell me I can't afford to hire, I'm like, oh, you don't understand. Your team makes you money. That's what your team does. Their job is to make you money. And then they generate their own paychecks. It's very clearly apparent with sales, but it should be the case with all areas of your business that you want everyone in the business to understand how they make the company money.
That makes
sense. Directly or indirectly. They're either in the position of sales or sales support, as I am quoting from my good friend Dino Watt. There are only two positions in any company, sales or sales support.
I love that. I'm going to take that quote. And Dino, I'm going to give you credit like the first two times. Then after that, it's mine. Thank you so much for breaking this down. You guys, I hope that you took notes. Or, you know, you can download this and listen to it again. We're on a replay. But the thing that I love about the way that you broke this down is that we can come back to this, use it as a reference, check in with yourself about where you are in your hireability, right? Your higher, maybe that should be a quiz, a lead generator quiz of a hireability index. Because then when you can recognize where you are in that process, then you can first of all, stop making yourself wrong about what you're not mm-hmm. doing or what you could be doing and your hesitation and the blah, blah, blah. Sometimes you just need a reality check of like, oh, this is why.
Yeah.
I have been hesitant to hire somebody because I needed to listen to this podcast episode so that I can get an actual strategy and not just do it by the seat of my pants. And then yes. the third thing, the second thing is about scaling. So like when you begin with the end in mind, you can make strategic decisions and not just plug leaks and put out fires, right? Mm-hmm. And then the third piece about it is it requires leadership from you to hire a team, to onboard a team, to manage a team, to fire a team, to create culture, company culture, etc. You are literally putting yourself in a training camp when you volunteer to do this, when you decide that this is the next part of your thought leadership platform, is to use to have your team and equip your team to be an income stream. So I'm so happy that we had this conversation. And I'm happy that we had the Thought Leadership Month. It's like a perfect birthday gift. It's my birthday month, March. So this was like perfect for me. Thank you for the birthday gift.
Yes. Awesome. I hope it's helpful for all of you. And we would love to hear from you. So connect with us on Instagram. I'm at Amy Walker Coach and Monica is at Monica Ogando. Leave us a comment, leave us a review. We would absolutely love to hear from you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, everybody.